When the atheists, after being well-versed in the Vedic scientific knowledge, annihilate inhabitants of different planets flying unseen in the sky on well-built rockets prepared by the great scientist Maya, the Lord will bewilder their minds by dressing himself attractively as Buddha and will preach on sub-religious principles. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This incarnation of Lord Buddha is not the same Buddha incarnation we have in the present history of mankind. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the Buddha incarnation mentioned in this verse appeared in a different age of Kali Yuga. In the duration of life of one Manu, there are more than 72 Kali Yugas, and in one of them, the particular type of Buddha mentioned here would appear. Lord Buddha incarnates at a time when the people are most materialistic and preaches common sense religious principles, such as ahimsa. Such ahimsa is not a religious principle itself, but it is an important quality for persons who are actually religious. It is a common sense religion because one is advised to do no harm to any other animal or living being, because such harmful actions are equally harmful to he who does the harm. But before learning these principles of nonviolence, one has to learn two other principles, namely to be humble and to be prideless. Unless one is humble and prideless, one cannot be harmless and nonviolent. And after being nonviolent, one has to learn tolerance and simplicity of living. One must offer respects to the great religious preachers and spiritual leaders, and also train the senses for controlled action, learning to be unattached to family and home, and enacting devotional service to the Lord, etc. At the ultimate stage, one has to accept the Lord and become his devotee. Otherwise, there is no religion. In religious principles, there must be God in the center. Otherwise, simple moral instructions are merely sub-religious principles, generally known as upadharma, or nearness to religious principles. Hare Krishna. Today we are reading from Canto 2 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 7, entitled Scheduled Incarnations, Text Number 37. Long ago, Lord Brahma, who is Atmabhu, took his birth directly from the Supreme Lord Vishnu, spoke this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam to Narada Muni, his son and dear disciple. Lord Brahma, being empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead with knowledge of Veda, also with the potency to help him to create the secondary manifestations of this material universe, understood the purpose of his universal creation. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Brahma expresses to Lord Vishnu in his prayer, what a thankless task this is to help create universes. Because universes are created specifically to create frustration and suffering. And great devotees are paradukkha-dukkhi. They weep from their hearts when they see other people suffer. So why create such a facility which will bring about such suffering? The purpose of the universe, Brahma explains, really is to be frustrated with all of our attempts to be happy, separate from the Lord, and to come to our natural constitutional position of surrendering to Krishna. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga, to become detached from the sources of misery in the form of material enjoyment and become attached to the rendering service to the Lord. Brahma knows. He's the agent that the Lord has empowered to create the universe, so he knows its purpose. He knows how it works. There has been, since the time of Brahma's creation, many, many different philosophies of how to enjoy life, even in the name of religion or spirituality. Do as you like, how you like, enjoy, chant a mantra, control your breath, be happy. It will make the world a better place to live. Of course, we want to make the world a better place to live. But really what that means is a more conducive situation to become spiritually purified and go back home, back to Godhead. So Lord Brahma is an authority on this subject. He is participating in the creation. He knows how it works. And he understands that the only shelter from the miseries of material existence is the causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So herein he is explaining how the Lord, who is so compassionate to all living entities, descends into this material universe again and again and again to somehow or other attract our hearts back to his loving service. Krishna tells in Gita, Aham Bija Pratapita. He is the seed-giving father of every living being. He is within the heart of everyone. He never leaves us. Such a well-wishing, loving father. Even living beings have rejected him and engaged in such wayward, sinful activities to the extent that they become born as insects or worms or plants. But still, the Lord as Paramatma is seated right beside the soul within the heart of every living being, waiting to give us the proper guidance and direction whenever we come to our proper senses. In this particular verse, Lord Brahma is prophesizing the descent of Lord Buddha. Srila Prabhupada, in this beautiful purport, is quoting Sri Jiva Goswami, great authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, how there are 72 Kali Yugas in the life of each Manu. There are 14 Manus in the day of Brahma. There are 100 days. And then Brahma lives 311 trillion years. How many Kali Yugas are there in the life of Brahma? I have done this mathematical calculation previously, but I'm not so good with remembering numbers. But it's a very large number. So the Lord appears sometimes in different ways in different yugas. Lord Buddha sometimes appears and performs different types of pastimes. In a previous Kali Yuga to the one that we are living now, it is described that Buddha was very attractively dressed. And when the demons were flying on rockets, invisible, and subduing various planets, he attracted their minds by speaking sub-religious principles. Srila Prabhupada explains the principle behind the various forms and incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is compassion. It is love. It is mercy. I was just day before yesterday listening to a tape of Srila Prabhupada giving lecture, and he was discussing Lord Buddha. He was actually praising so enthusiastically the mercy of Lord Buddha. People were misusing the Vedic literatures to justify slaughter of animals, cruelty. This is a common thing in all religions throughout the world. Throughout the history of mankind, I don't believe there is any spiritual path or real religion that is exempt to this deviation of utilizing the words of the scriptures to justify one's own egoistic purposes in life. This is a very, very dangerous situation. We see in the world today, people all over the world are terrified of terrorism. And the most dangerous of all terrorism is that which is based on religious ideals. Where clever, intelligent people somehow or other manipulate the words of the scriptures in such a way through various forms of word jugglery to justify and authorize their envy, their hatred. And common people follow. The blind lead the blind. That is why Srila Prabhupada and the real acharyas emphasize the need of parampara. We must understand from the realizations of previous acharyas what is actually the substance that the scripture is speaking. But then, even within parampara, even the guru, who's the present connection to the parampara, the tendency is that people even utilize their words to take out of context what they want to teach the world, what they want to justify. So not only do we need parampara, not only do we need the proper understanding of the scriptures, but in order for that to be, the individual must be very sincere. The individual must be submissive. So today we are seeing so many gross examples of misrepresentation of scripture in all religions of the world. Historically, Lord Buddha came at a time when Brahmins were practically having slaughterhouses, making money, eating meat on the basis of some out of context scriptural injunctions. So Lord Buddha saw that these people were atheistic, they were stubborn, So he basically didn't talk about God. Rather, he spoke about just basic, Prabhupada explains, common sense religious principles. Be good, do good. Like that. Ahimsa. He explained about the science of reincarnation. He explains the principles of karma. And if you cause harm to others, if you engage in immoral principles, you must suffer the reaction. So just be good and just do good. Take this meditation, be peaceful. Now Srila Prabhupada explains herein that Buddha was so clever that he got people to worship them. He got people to worship him. Even today, if you go to Buddhist temples, everyone's offering lamps and bowing down. They don't believe in God, but Buddha's an incarnation of God, so he tricked them into following the instructions and worshiping God without even knowing that there's a God. Now, obviously, this is not the highest principle, but out of mercy, he's taking people from one level and somehow or other giving them a connection. Srila Prabhupada explains herein the importance of being harmless and nonviolent. Of course, Prabhupada explains that we have to have not a sentimental but a philosophical understanding of what it means to be nonviolent. It means to actually protect and have respect. But at the same time, to protect another's, sometimes taking physical action is nonviolence. Prabhupada gives that example, oftentimes, about the newspaper reporter who approached one of the greatest proponents of nonviolence in India and said, "You are preaching this ahimsa. I ask you this question. If I come to violate your daughter's chastity, and the only way to stop me is through physical force, will you take to physical force?" He said, "Absolutely not. Under no circumstance will I ever break my vow of resorting to physical force." And the newspaper reporter, who happened to have some common sense, said, "That is violence. To do nothing when somebody is exploiting another, that is violence. To take physical action to stop, that is nonviolence." That is principle of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna was teaching Arjuna nonviolence by telling him to go on the battlefield and fight. It would have been violence for Arjuna to just leave the battlefield and let the Kurus go on with their exploitation. He is a Kshatriya. It's his duty to protect religious principles. It's his duty to protect the innocent from those who are usurping other people's rights. But actual nonviolence is based on the real principle of knowledge with compassion. Srila Prabhupada explains here, one cannot actually be nonviolent unless one is first humble and prideless, quote unquote. Sometimes people are proud of being nonviolent. Haribo. Just like devotees are vegetarian. In fact, we only eat Krishna prasad. So sometimes we have seen that the devotees just condemn the Christians and other people as just being malechas and meat eaters and cruel and slaughterhouses and all of that stuff. But once some people, I was in Italy, and people approached me and asked, "You know, it seems that some of these Christians, you know, they really, really make intense sacrifices for the benefit of humanity. You know, they weep and cry to see the suffering of humans, and they really go out of their way to help humans who are suffering, but they eat meat. And there's devotees who will condemn any meat eater because they're vegetarians. But right here in the temple, they're cruel to each other." Haribol. So obviously, compassion to humans without compassion to animals is a very serious defect in the principle of ahimsa. But then if we take a humble position, we must understand also that if we're respectful to the animals, but we're not respectful to other human beings, what to speak of devotees, if we create violence to them by hurting them with our words, by hurting them with our actions, then we're not actually nonviolent. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught us the real principle, amanina manadena, to be respectful to every living being, to be respectful to the insects. There's that beautiful story that Shruti Kirti Prabhu tells of Srila Prabhupada. When he was just sitting, looking at the floor, and Shruti Kirti Prabhu was wondering, why is he looking at the floor? And Prabhupada, for a long time, was just looking at the floor, very, very, very compassionately, attentively. And there was a tiny little insect, just crawling on the floor. And Prabhupada said, "He's hungry. He can't find food in here. Pick him up and put him on the leaf outside on the tree so he can eat nicely." Haribo. Although Srila Prabhupada's acharya, preaching to the masses, writing books, law books for mankind of spirituality, still, he's so much considering the welfare of an insignificant insect. Taking so much time to actually help that little insect. That is compassion. Real compassion means respect to all living beings, including devotees. It may be controversial, but including devotees. Otherwise, who will take serious our discussion about closing the slaughterhouses if with our words we are causing violence to other people's hearts? So therefore, Srila Prabhupada is giving us this very, very vital instruction that real nonviolence is not just ceasing murder and bloodshed. That's the grossest form of violence. But Vaishnava aparad, that is violence usually, not only of the body, but it can also be violence of the mouth. Speaking in such a way to hurt another person's heart out of carelessness or out of envy or out of ego, that is an offense. Sometimes we speak the truth nicely and we hurt people's hearts. But if we're doing it out of compassion, that's not offensive. But if there's ego, if there's some envy, and we speak and hurt another person, that is violence. And Krishna takes it so serious that you may fall down because of that violence of the mouth. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, blaspheming a devotee is like drinking poison. Praising devotee is like, and Krishna is like drinking nectar. So if we have actually a position of humility and pridelessness, which Prabhupada is emphasizing herein, then we can actually understand what is the spiritual principle of ahimsa. What is actual nonviolence? Para upakar. Really living for the welfare of other living beings. As long as we want to be the master, as long as we want to be controller, as long as we have this desire for position, for pratishta, as long as we have this desire for enjoyment, either on the gross or subtle levels, then we are impelled to various activities that unnecessarily hurt other people's hearts. Or disregard other species of life's hearts. Srila Prabhupada continues. He says, unless one is humble and prideless, one cannot be harmless and nonviolent. Without harmlessness and nonviolence in this sense, we are not even following common sense religious principles. Srila Prabhupada in Bhagavatam explains, we transcend the modes of nature from the platform of the mode of goodness. That is why we follow these four regulative principles. Srila Prabhupada explains here that being a vegetarian in itself is not really religion. It's just basic morality. But it is a foundation, it is a stepping stone by which we can actually practice real religion. When we take initiation, we take two very essential vows. And it's important to understand how they interrelate with one another. First, we take the vow, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating. Is that religion? There's atheists who do that. Huh? There are people who have no conception or belief in God who, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. There are people who desire to go to heavenly planets or just desire to have a better life on earth and follow these principles. It's basic common sense. It's morality. So why do we take these vows? No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. So that actually we can be on a platform where we can make the most progress in the real religious principle. To chant the holy names. Service to Vaishnavas and the chanting of the holy names of the Lord and compassion to others are the real religious principles in this age of Kali. Harinam, harinam, harinam eva kevalam, kalo nasteva, 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 gathiranyatha. There is no other way of attaining perfection of liberation in the age of Kali except through the chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Krishna has descended in his name. It's the only benediction and hope in the age of Kali. So we take this vow to chant the holy names. But in order to chant the holy names in the proper spirit, there also has to be basic common sense morality. If we think we can jump over basic common sense reality in the name of very, very high philosophical preaching, then our high philosophical thought will remain theoretical. It will not be realized. Srila Prabhupada, he would sometimes say that you can tell who is my follower because they are perfect ladies and gentlemen. Hare Krishna. Now this word, ladies and gentlemen, he was speaking to materialistic people. He was speaking according to their understanding. The devotees are perfect ladies and gentlemen. That means they're honest, they're truthful, they're nonviolent, they're respectful. They live by very, very high principles. And they're transcending the modes of material nature by rendering service and by chanting the holy names of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that after mind being nonviolent, that means after being humble and prideless, after amanina manadena, offering all respect to others, expecting none in return, after being humble like a blade of grass and tolerant like a tree, pursuing these principles, then one actually becomes nonviolent. And then the next stage, one offers respects to the great. One has to learn tolerance and simplicity. Simplicity is one of the most beautiful spiritual virtues. In fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada quotes him several times in this regard, says that you can't really begin the path of bhakti, truly, without sharalata, without simplicity. Now, what is simplicity? Simplicity. Prabhupada explains it in many different ways, and they should be very attentively understood. One place Prabhupada explains, simplicity means without duplicity, which really means we have no ulterior motives. We speak honestly, truthfully. Srila Prabhupada quotes in one place that speaking straightforward does not mean you speak in such a way that you harshly break people's hearts. Prabhupada means straightforward means speaking the truth in a palatable way that actually enlightens people, that actually encourages people. That is Prabhupada's quotation. Being simple is a very, very great opulence in this age of Kali. Srila Prabhupada was so simple. He just didn't want anything for himself. He just wanted to serve. He just wanted to speak the truth. Recently, I was reading Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja offering in 1973 in London. There were hundreds and hundreds of devotees from all over the European continent and the UK coming to surrender to him, to glorify him on the day of his appearance. This was the day after the installation of Sri Radha Gokulananda in Bhaktivedanta Manor. So it was an especially big, big festival. Were you there, Maharaj, for that? It was a glorious festival. And Prabhupada's Vyas Puja address was absolutely amazing. First of all, he explains how this worship is not for a man. This worship is for Veda Vyas. And the Guru is the representative of Veda Vyas. His qualification is he's speaking the words of Veda Vyas. He's not giving what he has. He is giving what Veda Vyas has given. He's simply the medium. And whatever worship is through the Guru going to through Parampara to Krishna. And then he was explaining the principle of Parampara. And he quoted Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he said, you will be happy to know that our Pradyumana has
just help me to complete Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And everyone said, Jai, Jai, Jai. And Prabhupada said, actually, Pradyumna did all the work. Therefore, I call him Pandit Mahasoy. Mahasoy is the name that Jiva Goswami gave to Narottam Das Thakur. It's a very, very elevated name. He said, I have given him the name Pandit Mahasoy. Because so much of my literatures is based on the Sanskrit language. And he is helping to edit the Sanskrit. In fact, he said, it is because of Pradyumna's hard work that Chaitanya Charitamrita is now available to all of you. He was praising his disciple. And then he started praising Pradyumna's wife, Arundhati, because she helped in the proofreading and other things. And then he started praising other grihasthas who were doing so much service. And then Srila Prabhupada said, actually, I'm an old man. He said, my Guru Maharaj, when I was 25 years old, he ordered me to take the message of Lord Chaitanya to the Western world. He said, but I did it when I was 70 years old. I really took up this mission. He said, I should have done it then at 25, but better late than never. He says, I'm 70 years old. I'm a very old man. How much can I do? It is because of all of you. It is because of my disciples who are working so hard, who are so dedicated, that this movement is spreading throughout the world. And Srila Prabhupada was explaining, what is the qualification of a guru? He said, you could all be gurus. Just selflessly repeat the words of the previous acharyas, and you will be empowered to do great things. I found this great and very amazing. The world is coming to glorify him, and he's taking no credit at all. He's giving all credit to his guru. He's giving all credit to his disciples. He's speaking about himself in such a simple way. And by doing so, he's teaching us what is actual simplicity. To be humble. To give all respects to others. Of course, we understand with Srila Prabhupada who he really was. Who are these disciples who were helping him? How did he lift them up? How did he take them from a derelictic condition of material attachment and sinful culture and bring them to the platform of very, very sincere, dedicated Vaishnavas? It was by his love, by his compassion, by his knowledge, by his empowered spiritual energies. He saved people's lives. Prabhupada said he shed buckets of blood to make each devotee Krishna conscious. And after shedding buckets of blood, heart attacks, strokes, seasickness, all these poverty, all kinds of difficulties to make each person a devotee, then he gives all credit to the devotees. So simple. Once at New Dwarka, Srila Prabhupada was in his nice quarters. There was even a little chandelier. It's not really opulent, it's just basically nice. But it's nice. And Prabhupada said to one of his followers, do you remember my quarters at Radha Damodar? And in those days, it wasn't like it is now, Radha Damodar. It has been really renovated. It was just really simple back in the early 70s. Very, very simple. like a little cave practically. He said, you remember my place in Radha Damodar? I'm simply longing to go back to live there, but that would be sense gratification for me, because my Guru Maharaj wants me to preach to the world. Therefore, he's accepting jet airplanes. He's accepting nice quarters, beautiful quarters given by disciples all over the world. He's accepting beautiful garlands and Bias pujas. But he's longing to be at Radha Damodar temple where he can just, with all just simplicity, practically poverty, just be chanting Harinam and worshiping Sri Radha Damodar. Simplicity. He was accepting facilities for our sake. He had no duplicity. His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj often tells a nice story where Srila Prabhupada very boldly was explaining avajananti ma mudha, that those who do not accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, those who consider him an ordinary person, are fools and asses. They are mudhas. And somebody, Prabhupada was speaking very bold right here at Radharas Bihari temple. And one cultured man says, why do you have to use such harsh words as fools and asses, mudhas? Why do you have to use such harsh? Prabhupada said, he said, Krishna said it. I didn't say it, Krishna said it. I'm just repeating Krishna. If Krishna said it, what can I do? I can only repeat. That is simplicity. Prabhupada wasn't judgmental. He wasn't condemnational because of some egoistic platform that I'm better than you. He was simply repeating Krishna's words as Krishna's instrument, as Krishna's representative. That is perfect nonviolence. Otherwise, violence is very subtle. Even if you're speaking very, very sweet, 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 sweet words to everyone to make them feel good, if you're not speaking the truth, that's another type of violence. You're misleading them. You're misleading them to another womb where they're being just forced out and they have to suffer terribly and all kinds of karmic consequences. To speak in a way that's facilitating a person to go on with their maya, that's also a type of violence. So actual nonviolence is a very, very deep subject. It means you have to be humble. You have to be simple. With all respect, pridelessly, as an instrument of the great souls, just repeating God's words. And ultimately, Srila Prabhupada explained the real purpose of the preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement is to induce people to chant the holy names of Krishna. That is compassion. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was the very embodiment of supreme mercy, came to give us that gift. By his example, he taught us what is Vaishnav lifestyle. He was so humble, he wouldn't even hurt the heart of Ramchandra Puri. He was willing to fast just to show the world how to honor a senior person. Haribo, this is the culture Mahaprabhu gave us. And with this culture, we can actually transcend the modes of material nature by sincerely chanting the holy names.
Is there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
You just mentioned that Buddhism is based on not the broad principles of the highest understanding of God, but it's somewhat based on the subjective principles. But still, nowadays we find that it is one of the leading religion and one of the leading people. They are coming and very devoted to Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are we lacking?
The very essence of Buddhism, which is nonviolence, is very, very rarely even taught by Buddhists. Buddha appeared to stop animal slaughter and meat eating. And today, I'll give an example. Personal example, with your permission. Before I met Srila Prabhupada, from Himalayas, I was studying Buddhism after studying from various sadhus in Himalayas, and I was in Bodh Gaya. Bodh Gaya is the holiest place in the whole universe for every Buddhist throughout the world, because that is the place where Buddha sat under that tree and attained nirvana, according to their historical perspective. So I was really trying to understand what is this Buddhist conception and what is truthfulness and nonviolence, the Eightfold Noble Path of Lord Buddha. And I was doing meditation. And one day I was walking down the road and a rickshaw went by, and this one monk was sitting on the rickshaw, and very sweetly he said, "Please, would you like to sit with me?" So I was thinking, oh, this is a very good honor that I am being given. As I was 19, 20, he was in his 50s. So I'm sitting, and I asked about himself. He said he was from Thailand, and he was the guru for one of the biggest monasteries in Thailand. He had something like 3,000 monks that he was training up, and he was the guru for in a very, very large monastery. And I asked him, "How long will you be here in Bodh Gaya?" He said, "I'm on my way to the railway station right now." Actually, he said, "I was planning to spend 6 months, but I've only been here for about a week. But I cannot tolerate staying here in India because they have such low quality meat to eat." So I was a little, in those days I was thinking everybody is a great saint. But I was confused. I said, "You eat meat?" He said, "Yes, yes, of course." Haribo. So the basic principle that Buddha appeared for, most Buddhists have missed that point. But some of the teachers are teaching some basic principles of goodness of people toward other people. And people are attracted to that. Just, you know, by some meditation, you become more peaceful, and you become more generous and charitable and nice and good to others. So people are very attracted to that. So many, many followers. Generally, the organizations that grow most rapidly in the world we live are the ones that teach these kind of things. Just be in your life as you are. Do this meditation or this breath control, be a little more peaceful, and just be nice to each other. Be a kind person, be a gentleman. People are very attracted to that. Because even that's very rare. Even that's a type of surrender for them, just to be nice. Huh? Just to be a little moral. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, we're supposed to be moral, we're supposed to be nice, but on the transcendental platform. Sarva dharman purityaja mamekam sharanam braja. Our purpose is to surrender to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada explained, if you want plastic jewelry, there's hundreds and thousands of people going to the discount stores to get. But if you want diamond, not many people are willing to pay the price. We can accommodate anybody. Just chant Hare Krishna. Just start chanting. Whatever else you're doing, just start chanting. But ultimately, our philosophy is guiding people to the diamond. And when they see that this is ultimately what I have to do, even though I'm being accepted and respected just for eating a little prasad, ultimately I know that this is the diamond and this is the price of it. So people are more inclined toward just wearing plastic jewelry forever. Yes, Devaki Nandan Prabhu? Huh?
Vipassana.
Ah, yes, yes.
Is it part of Buddhism or is it one more thing in religion?
One what?
One more thing in religion.
According to Srimad Bhagavatam, anything that's not teaching the ultimate, pure, unalloyed, unconditional devotional service is Kaitava Dharma. So from that principle, we can understand. But as far as Vipassana, historically, it has been practiced for many, many centuries, and the practitioners claim that Buddha taught it. We have no evidence that he did or didn't, but it's a traditional form of Buddhist meditation from Southeast Asia, definitely. It's not just somebody's concoction, it's a traditional form of meditation for many, many years. So it can be respected in that way. But then again, from the point of view of Bhagavatam, that which is not teaching unconditional devotional service is Kaitava Dharma. So therefore, we accept what is favorable for pure devotional service. And we do not accept those things that are based on lesser levels of consciousness. Huh? Actually, that is a more... I studied it in Bodh Gaya, and it was very interrelated with the philosophy of Buddhism. But to present it to the common people, they say like this. Even one of the greatest yoga teachers in the world today is actually a member of Ramanuja Sampradaya. Actually, Ishtadev is Ram and Hanuman, but is very, very careful to present the yoga system that he teaches as completely non-sectarian, completely non-religious. It's just the science of yoga. Huh? It's a way of presenting to the world to get very, very broad acceptance. Because if, as soon as you bring in any type of faith or belief in a particular type of religion, then you turn away a lot of people. But if it's just a science, if it's just a practice, nah, people are very much attracted. Huh? Sometimes, yes, but usually even the teachers do all those things. But we are basing our lives on the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam. And as Vaishnavas, we actually evaluate everything from the point of view of Srimad Bhagavatam. So on a very relative level, we can discuss all of these matters. But from the point of view of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand whatever is not conducive to awakening our pure unalloyed love for Krishna, we simply have no concern. It's Kaitava Dharma. We don't see Prahlad Maharaj or Ambarish Maharaj or the Pandavas or the gopis or gopas. They couldn't care less about these things. In fact, gopis, they were very much complaining to Lord Krishna that you sent Uddhava to Vrindavan and he told us that we should be peaceful and meditate. Haribol Maharaj. But we cannot do that. We want to serve you. We want to love you. Everything else is rejected. So this is Srimad Bhagavatam. We are not concerned with just being more peaceful or living a better life in this world. That is all distraction. We are concerned with dharma prajita kaita patra, with actual surrender to the will of Krishna. But we must understand maturely what it means to surrender to Krishna. We cannot neglect basic common sense principles of ethics and morality. They must be there. That is a Vaishnava, ladies, gentlemen. But why are we like that? We're not like that just to be good people. We're not like that just to be good and do good. We're like that so that our consciousness is proper, by which we can dedicate everything to hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and serving the Lord and actually making an impression in people's hearts in the message of the Lord. So we are not so much concerned with the relative conceptions of, you know, who's a real Buddhist and who's a real like that. We're concerned with what will actually bring people to the point of pure, unalloyed, loving service to Krishna. That is our meditation. That is our mission. Shishudadhara Ras Bihari have appeared to attract our hearts. And we are their instruments, we are their agents under Srila Prabhupada's direction to teach people how to love them, how to serve them by our behavior, by our words. When people come to the temple of the Lord, they should really feel that these are people, the residents of the temple, the congregation of the temple, these are people who really love Krishna. And that will be translated by our attitude toward them. Prabhupada was very tolerant and very compassionate, very forgiving and very loving to anyone and everyone who came before him. But at the same time, he taught the highest principles. If you speak to the old devotees, they never felt Prabhupada was judgmental toward them. They felt even in their fallen state, when they came, Prabhupada loved them, cared for them, was serving them. But how? By giving the highest truth. It's a carrier. And we have all inherited that service. All of us, in whatever way. To be a follower of Prabhupada means to actually take his mission as our life, according to our capacity. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.